The opinions expressed on the Fanalyze podcast are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening. Hello, sports fans. Welcome to the Fanalyze podcast. My name is Matt.
I'm Josh.
I'm Miguel.
And I'm Christina.
If you love sports podcasts, you're in the right place. We'll have tons of fun segments, from rants to trivia, and of course, some debates. However, our slogan, made by fans for fans, is at the center of our work. We make sure that all the opinions expressed and points raised are backed up by statistics and extensive research that we've done so you, the listener, don't have to. Because at the end of the day, what do sports fans love to do more than talk about sports? So we want you to leave every episode having heard different opinions and being equipped with the necessary information to form your own. All right, so our first segment, we'll transition into that quickly. It's our analysis segment, The Play Call.
Blue 14, Blue 14, set, hit.
As you can tell by our episode title, Take a Breath, what we want you to do is to step back and take a breath. The sports world has been hectic recently, to say the least. There's been a lot of massive trades. So what we'll first do is review one of the biggest trades that went down in the NHL. The trade consisted of Colorado receiving Mikko Rantanen and Taylor Hall. The Avalanche received Marty Natchez and Jack Drury, and a 2025 second round pick and a 2026 fourth round pick. And the Blackhawks received a 2025 third, as well as retaining 50% of Mikko Rantanen's cap hit.
My original thoughts on this trade were, what is Colorado doing? Like, I understand that Rantanen's on an expiring contract, and he's going to be asking a lot, and maybe you don't have that much cap space, but you've got to find a way to keep him around, because over the past few years, he's been one of the best players in the league, you know, 50 goal scorer, 100 point guy. And I don't know, to lose a guy like that when, you know, you're still in a contending phase, Colorado can still be one of the best teams in the league, and to lose one of your biggest pieces, I don't know if you can really win a trade like that. And I think they did well with under the circumstances, getting a guy like Natchez on a career year. But I don't know, my original thoughts were like, man, this is a tough loss for Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that, like, losing a high caliber player like Rantanen is pretty, it's pretty devastating for the Colorado team. But I mean, it kind of just shows that they're kind of looking for a long-term investment.
Yeah, for sure. I think in the long run, it can help both teams. Getting the, like, top draft picks can definitely help, like, rebuild their teams and maybe even strengthen them.
Yeah, so I think it's important not to overshadow what Rantanen is and what he's meant to the Colorado Avalanche. Just this season with Colorado, he played in 49 games, 25 goals, 39 assists for 64 points, which averages out to 1.31 points per game. So definitely not sluggish. He's still one of the elite forwards in the NHL, and he's still just 28 years old. He's in his final year, 6 of 6, for a $9.2 million AAV contract. So he's making a lot of money, but in terms of Carolina's result of this trade, Chicago taking on $4.625 million of that contract, that definitely helps Carolina's cap situation. From Chicago's perspective, they'll still have approximately 7.5 remaining in cap space. So for them, obviously, in the stage of rebuilding that they are and at the bottom of the standings, for them to take on that retained salary is not a big deal. Moving on from Taylor Hall, if they're not, you know, starting to move towards the playoffs, it makes sense to offload vets. You know, Taylor Hall is 33 years old, so he's not necessarily a long-term solution in a place like Chicago. We can shift to the Colorado perspective on this. They got Jack Drury and Martin Natchez.
The thing with Colorado is that I think they definitely get more stability with Natchez and Drury. Drury is like a third, fourth line guy. He's not going to put up a lot of points, but he's so solid defensively, which is definitely something that Colorado needs. Like, they have their top offensive talent. Where they've struggled this season is keeping the puck out of the net. So a guy like Jack Drury, who can play on your third, fourth line center, you know, that's going to help you a lot. And then Natchez, obviously career year. You know, he had 55 points in his time with Carolina. Honestly, it's looking good for Colorado, especially as Miguel mentioned, like long-term investment. Nature still has term, and it's not like he's a massive, massive downgrade from Rantanen. You know, he's still a top talent in the league this year. I think he slots in really well on that first power play unit. He's just somebody that can move the puck around with Makar and MacKinnon really well. So I think he can mesh really well there. I think if he can continue this kind of play that he's shown this season throughout the rest of his contract, then easily we can see Colorado ultimately winning this trade.
Yeah, and Jack Drury's on a very affordable contract for Colorado.
Yeah.
And he'll be a UFA after next season, so they at least get another year out of him. Same thing with Natchez. He's a UFA after next season at $6.5 million per year. That's a pretty good price for a guy that's come off a career season. The only thing I would say for Colorado here is they'll finish the season above the salary cap going into the offseason when you take their annual salary cap and subtract the projected cap hit. That'll put them $5 million over the cap. So they'll have to move some money around in the offseason to make this deal work if they don't make more moves at the trade deadline. But in terms of their haul for a superstar player like Rantanen, I don't think Colorado did bad by any means.
Yeah, for sure. I think to add on to Josh's point, Natchez was part of like a very kind of structured team in Carolina. And now that he's moving on to Colorado, their power play I would expect to be a little more fruitful because of Natchez now being a more like up-tempo and kind of high, quick play style kind of guy.
And I think another thing to touch on is like Kale Makar's contract is coming up in a couple of years. Like he is signed under next year, and then he needs a new contract.
Yeah, and if you want, we can shift to the contract situation in Carolina. So Orlov, at 32 years old, he's making $7.75 million a year. His contract expires at the end of this season. Same thing for 39-year-old Brent Burns, who's making $5.28 million. Slavin at $5.3 million at 30 years old. But then looking into the future, I think obviously what everyone knows is Carolina's goal for this trade is to get themselves a piece that's going to win them a Stanley Cup.
And I think they're
at
definitely
the end of the season, Rantanen's contract is up. And as we know from last year with Jake Guentzel, they weren't able to win a cup. Okay, so the next trade we'll cover is the JT Miller trade to Vancouver. I think that's a little bit more of a drama-filled situation for Vancouver. And there's been a lot of talk about why what happened between him and Pettersson happened. And I think that comes down to just the market of Vancouver. The fans are so invested. I think people are trying to place the blame on either the players, the management, the media. But I think it's really a combination of both. I mean, the fact that the team was okay with the message of there being a disgruntled relationship between Pettersson and Miller being out there meant that the media were going to start asking the players, and that makes for an awkward locker room. So it's unfortunate for Vancouver because what you continuously see with the Canucks is a very passionate fan base and a team that has all the right pieces in place to build upon to really become a cup contender beyond just a playoff team. And just look at last season. I mean, they nearly won the President's Trophy, and then they went to the second round and took Edmonton to the brink, who went all the way to the Cup Finals.
Yeah, for sure. It's sad to see this is how it had to end, with the trade only being the way to move forward for Vancouver. But I feel like the situation could have been handled better.
Yeah, and I think it just sort of comes down to the fact that like it's one of those cities that is so passionate. But because they're so passionate, they also get so much media coverage in that area. Like, the Canucks are huge there. So you get all of this pressure from the fans. You get all of this pressure from the media. And even if it started off as just some small little beef that they had with each other, it's just going to build up and build up from all of that outside pressure that at some point it's going to turn into something big. And then ultimately, there's not much you can do. Like, we saw this back with Erik Karlsson, right? There was this internal beef, I guess, with Mike Hoffman and like a whole bunch of stuff going on within their families, right? And then the only way that they could move on was through a trade. Erik Karlsson refused to be on the same team with him. You know, so it's just because of the media and the pressure from the fans that these things just tend to build and build and build until it sort of gets too big for you to play through.
I think to go back on your point on the cities, I think it's pretty good for NHL business in general, I'd say, because like you have New York and Vancouver, and Vancouver is a pretty big city, and New York is obviously New York. And I think that getting that tension between fans, and it'll get people riled up, you know, and I think people would enjoy to see matchups like that.
Yeah, and you know, I'll go as far as saying I think Vancouver are actually big winners in this trade. I think that's
really, you
know, might be controversial when you're giving up a guy like JT Miller, but let me explain. JT Miller is 31 years old. He's a center in Vancouver behind Pettersson, and he's making $8 million a year, and he's in year two of a 7-year deal, so he wasn't going to be going anywhere anytime soon. Filip Hedl, 25, also a center to play behind Pettersson, 4.43. Much more affordable, much younger, and it fixes the toxicity in the locker room. And Elias Pettersson's in year one of eight on obviously his big 11-6 deal, which, you know, you can talk about how his play's been this year compared to what he's getting paid and what his standards are and the fans' expectations. But as far as building a contending team, all they did is got a younger, more affordable piece to fill that position while also getting rid of a locker room cancer, a contributor to the toxic environment. So as far as that goes, I think Vancouver solved their immediate problem and got better for the future.
Okay, I see your point. But for this one trade, I like the first rounder. But it's the fact that they go and flip the first rounder. They don't have that anymore. They don't have the pick. So I think for me, the first rounder was one of the bigger pieces in that original trade. Obviously, Hedl's a great guy. Great player. Young, as you said. But I think that first rounder made the original trade a little more bearable if I'm a Canucks fan, because the Rangers haven't been that great this season. Obviously, they're turning it around, and with the addition of JT Miller, I can easily see them sneaking into the playoffs.
For sure. I think both teams definitely benefited from this change. For Miller, it's a chance to go back to New York. And for the Canucks, it's an opportunity to move forward and start fresh. I think it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out for both teams.
Okay, our next trade is obviously the one that shook the entire basketball and sporting world. Luka Doncic to the LA Lakers with Maxi Kleber and Markieff Morris. The Mavericks getting Anthony Davis, Max Christie, a 2029 first-round pick, while the Jazz get Jalen Hood, Schifino, and two 2025 second-round picks.
I'm just going to say it. What was that? Like, what are the Mavs doing?
No, I think that's what everyone's thinking.
I think that's I think I'm speaking for everyone when I say you need to fire this GM right now. Luka is one of, if not the best player in the league. You've got the speculations of the Mavs not liking his conditioning. But, like, he played the other night for the Lakers and he looked fine. It makes me wonder if there's something else there that they're not telling us.
There has to be.
Like, because the conditioning is fine. And you don't trade a guy like Luka just because he's out of shape.
Yeah, I mean, look at Zion Williamson, okay? He's had all of those same questions raised about his conditioning, and New Orleans has held on to him for dear life, and he's not Luka Doncic.
He is not Luka Doncic. He's not even close to Luka Doncic. So you don't trade a guy who is, again, one of the best players in the league just because he's gotten a little chubby.
Yeah, this is a strange business decision because, like, no one knew about it, apparently. Not Jason Kidd, the coach of the Mavericks. He didn't know about it. No players knew about it. It's like, what's going on in the background there?
Just to go over some of the statistics, I don't think anyone's trying to justify this trade, but for the sake of review and analysis, Luka Doncic, 25 years old, in his third year of a 5-year, $215 million contract, $43 million as his base salary this season. Obviously, there was some talk about, oh, he misses his Supermax opportunity, which would have been 5 years for $345 million. Now his long-term option with LA will only be 4 years at $229. Five All-NBA recognitions. Obviously, he was on the All-Rookie team, five-time NBA All-Star, and the NBA Rookie of the Year. Compared to Anthony Davis, 32 in year one of a 3-year, $175 million contract with a $54 million base salary. four-time All-NBA first team, one-time All-NBA second team. So that's the same number of All-NBA recognitions as Luka Doncic, despite the age difference. He's a three-time All-NBA first defensive team, which includes last year. He's obviously an NBA champion in 2020, a 10-time All-Star, and a three-time NBA blocks leader. I don't think anyone's trying to deny that a healthy Anthony Davis is one of the best defenders and one of the best big men in the 100%. Entire NBA. But for Luka Doncic, there's obviously a huge value discrepancy. I do like the Mavericks getting Max Christie. He's only 22 years old in year one of a four-year, $32 million contract. He's a good, young, affordable signing. Young guard that I really liked in LA. I think that's a good piece for them to have. But again, these are all the minor details in such a blockbuster trade that will unfortunately be overlooked. Kleber and Markieff Morris going to LA. Those guys are in their 30s. They're, you know, you hear rentals in hockey a lot more than in basketball, but they are rentals. They'll be there this season. What I found funny, Markieff Morris, he had a quote talking to a reporter, and they asked him what his reaction was to finding out about the trade, because Markieff Morris is been a journeyman in the NBA. He said, "I was shocked that somebody wanted me." he had no idea he was going anywhere.
It's just like looking at all the reactions from the players around the league, like not even just in the league, like athletes around the world, they were blowing up Twitter being like, "What the heck just happened?" It's just one of those trades. It's like Gretzky going to the Kings, you know, maybe not to the same extent because Gretzky at the time was already the greatest player of all time. But Luka, it's just, he's one of those players that you blow up a team for. You know, like, the Mavs were talking about maybe not being able to afford him after his contract. I don't care. You blow up your team for this guy to keep him in Dallas. And he wanted to stay in Dallas. He wanted to be a Maverick for life. And if you have a guy of that caliber who wants to stay in your city, you do anything you can to keep him there.
Well, it hasn't even come up yet that he led them to the NBA Finals last year.
I don't know how we missed that. Like, how are you just going to trade a guy like that who is a good leader and who can lead you to almost an NBA championship?
Yeah, it's crazy. I think Mark Cuban said that he would leave his wife before trading Luka Doncic, and then, you know, Nico Harrison stepped in. But
after he sold his majority share in the team.
Yeah.
He's regretting that decision now.
The other thing I'll just add, obviously, one of my opinions that may come up in another segment throughout this season is the value of draft picks in the NBA. Dallas got the 2029 first-round pick from the LA Lakers. And just for reference, the last time the worst team in the NBA actually won the draft lottery was the 2018 Phoenix Suns. And each of the last 2 years, the Detroit Pistons have been the worst record team in the NBA, and both years they fell back four spots to the fifth overall pick.
Ridiculous. But yeah, so NBA's really got the lottery figured
out. As far as the value of whatever that 2029 first round pick will come, if it doesn't get flipped, because picks are always moving in the NBA, is not the same value of a first round pick in pretty much any other major sports league, and I don't think it sweetens the deal as much as people may think it does.
Yeah, it's just a very shocking trade for the NBA.
It's almost as if like they wanted, they were eager to get rid of Luka.
Okay, Super Bowl. The Kansas City Chiefs cannot three-peat. They lose 40-22 to the Philadelphia Eagles, who win their second Super Bowl in franchise history.
And can I just say, I'm very happy that the Chiefs lost this game. I'm very happy to see Mahomes get absolutely attacked at every play by that amazing Philadelphia defense. I might be a little biased as a Bills fan, and maybe that's why I enjoy watching the Chiefs lose, because it doesn't happen very often in the playoffs. So maybe not the most exciting game, but it was very satisfying to watch, to say the least.
Oh, yeah, that Cooper DeChene pick six was immaculate. Like, I see so many replays on Instagram and on YouTube. He just shut them down.
On his birthday, too.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. What a birthday gift, a pick six.
In the Super Bowl.
And a Super Bowl, yeah.
In the Super Bowl, yeah. I don't think there's a moment in his life that can top that. You know, who needs a wedding? when you have a pick six in the Super Bowl on your birthday, and then you get a ring out of it.
I think one of the stories of the game, the Chiefs' rushing offense this year has helped sustain what has looked like a bit of a, not lackluster, but not the Chiefs of old passing offense with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. This season, so in this game, the Chiefs rushed for 49 total yards of offense. And the Chiefs' season average per game is 105.3 yards. 24 of those 49 yards came from Kareem Hunt, P. Ryan, and Pacheco combined. The rest was Patrick Mahomes. So the run, the rushing offense was entirely shut down by Philadelphia. And we saw what I think a lot of fans saw flashes of throughout the season, where the Chiefs' passing offense is not the same offense that it's been the last 2 years, certainly, and, you know, going back even further than that. But the Eagles' defense would not let the ground game get going. Obviously, their offense got out to a big lead, so the Chiefs had to pass more often, and they didn't let what had become Kansas City's sort of balancing factor materialize at all. In terms of passing statistics, Mahomes had 257 yards in the air, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Jalen Hurts, 17 for 22 for 221, 2 touchdowns and 1 interception. Devontae Smith had himself a game. The former Heisman winner really had his, what I would call his true breakout NFL moment in that Super Bowl. He's been a great receiver his entire career in the NFL over the last few years. But in a system that got A.J. Brown and is constantly bringing in wide receivers and increasing their receiving weapons, and then having Saquon Barkley, who's arguably right up there with Christian McCaffrey as far as receiving backs in the NFL go, Devontae Smith really stood out in this game, made a statement. 5 targets, 4 receptions for 69 yards and a touchdown. Obviously, there was that really long 46-yard touchdown catch off of Jalen Hurts' pass. So it was big for them. And then obviously the big name for the Chiefs, Xavier Worthy. 8 receptions on 8 targets, 157 yards, and 2 touchdowns with a longest catch of 50 yards. And for reference, that would have earned him 35 fantasy points.
Those debates are over. I don't want to hear Mahomes in the same conversation as Brady ever again.
I don't know about ever again.
No, I don't want to hear it ever again. Brady didn't get wiped like that in the Super Bowl. You know, and it's not like...
And it's true. Mahomes has gotten wiped twice, including once to Brady. Speaking of that game, the story of that game was also the defense of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So to compare the stats, the Eagles' defense got 6 sacks, 11 QB hits, 2 interceptions, a forced fumble that was recovered, a pressure rate of 38.1% with 0 blitzes on Sunday, and 16 total pressures, whereas the 2020 Tampa Bay Buccaneers had 3 sacks, 10 QB hits, an equal 2 interceptions, no fumbles, a 48% pressure rate with 5 blitz packages and 25 pressures, which set a Super Bowl record. So 2 outstanding defensive performances.
Philly
looks like they one-upped that Tampa Bay defense.
100% they one-upped them. And I think this changes the rest of the league's thinking on how to build a team.
Yeah, for sure. We just watched like Patrick Mahomes struggle throughout the whole night.
What do you guys think about Kelce's performance? Like, have you guys seen that one clip going viral where Patrick Mahomes is running for his life and then Kelce's just standing there? He's not moving.
Yeah, I saw that.
And his arms are up in the air like this, like he's given up. And I understand that you're down big. It's the Super Bowl. You never give up, you know? And I think that's just really poor to see from him. But I'm curious to, like, what do you guys think? Could this have been his last NFL game?
It could be. He said he's not sure yet. You know, he's getting up there in age. His production was way down this year. Can Travis Kelce still play in the NFL? Absolutely. But he said himself that he wants to make sure that he's giving a full effort for his teammates. So he's going to have to decide if he thinks he's still able to do that.
Yeah, for sure. When we, like, see him, as Josh said, like, give up in the Super Bowl, like, you never give up. You always keep going. So this could be the end for him, I think.
Okay, and with that being said, a preview to next week's episode. We have a Four Nations face-off debrief as well as an NHL trade deadline preview, an NFL mock draft now that we are well past the Senior Bowl and the NFL draft combine, as well as an NFL free agency preview as it starts in a few days. We'll see you next week.